Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Jones!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes, and also Simon Mann as well. He'll be joining shortly. 4th of April 2024, the day before the start of the 2024 County Championship season, and cue for cold weather, rain, etc. I notice it's going to be 4 degrees tonight in Durham. In fact, I remember starting a season for Middlesex, must be something like 40 years ago now, and Jeff Thompson was the overseas player for Middlesex that year, and we actually had an early season game in Durham at Darlington. And I remember him coming out of the changing rooms in about four sweaters and a bobble hat, saying it's not even as cold as this back in my fridge back in Brisbane. And that was a pre-season game before the county championship season started. 5th of April, it's a very early time to start county championship cricket. Just looking at old Wisden's actually, and 1994 Wisden, so 30 years ago, county championship started on April the 28th, around about then. And actually, even later than that, if I go back to my first Wisden, I've been cleaning out my parents' house, actually, finally selling the house that was in the family for 65 years, and found a few old Wisdens in there, including the 1969 Wisden, in which it shows that the county championship started on the 1st of May. So it really is unseemly early for championship cricket to start on the 5th of April. It's been that way, I suppose, now for the last few years to try and fit in those first matches before the T20 season starts. So actually, looking at my Cricketer magazine wall chart, there are 8 blocks of county championship fixtures in April and May, and then obviously over to the T20 Vitality Blast after that. So it's going to be hand warmers and bobble hats and so on out in the middle for this first round of county championship games. I guess the pick of the round would be Lancashire, Surrey at Old Trafford. Lancashire, the big heavyweight county who haven't won the championship for a while. Of course, Surrey, 2 in a row, so hoping to make it a hat-trick. And those two sides, you know, so power-packed with all sorts of star names. Actually, today, though, we're going to focus on the other end of the table, or the other end of the championship, if you like, the second division and Gloucestershire, because our special guest today in the Virtual Cricket Club is Mark Alleyne, Gloucestershire's favourite son, the man who captained them to 7 one-day trophies during the late 1990s and during an absolute stellar period for Gloucestershire, and was also coach then in the early 2000s, and he's come back to be their head coach again for this year, piloted in almost at the last moment actually to help the club that came bottom of the second division last year, the Wooden Spoonists. So I guess you'd say the only way is up. I thought it'd be appropriate if Simon Mann, lifetime Gloucestershire fan, interviewed Mark Alane, and I'll just interject with occasional questions. And the first thing that Simon understandably asked Mark was, given Gloucestershire's form over the last couple of years, has he taken on the toughest job in cricket?
No, that would be a little bit unfair, I think. That said, I think all 18 counties, you know, everyone has their work cut out every year to try and compete over what is a quite kind of congested season. But, you know, it's all good fun. We all start on a level pegging at the start of the year. So, yeah, reason to be excited.
So what's your, I mean, how would you sum up your coaching philosophy? You're the head coach for the second time. How would you sum up your philosophy and approach?
Well, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to evolve and develop our philosophies, but in many ways, you do have to kind of match it to the group you're coaching. I've been fortunate. I started beginning of March now, so just over 4 weeks with the group. So really enjoying, you know, getting to know them a little bit better, understanding what they're good at, what we need to improve. And, of course, my philosophy is based around let's get out, play, enjoy it, play on the front foot, and try and get in front and stay in front, basically.
So that does that mean attacking, batting? I mean, it sounds a little bit like we might be going down the sort of Baz Ball-y type route, or is that not really the case?
Well, there's a tenuous link there, but no. I mean, we've got to be smart. I mean, you know, we can't counter. You've got to play the situation every time. But whenever there's a chance to be positive, we'll definitely grab it with both hands. If there's time to sit in and soak it up, we'll make sure we're in that position too. So in a lot of ways, it's not really a version of Baz Ball. It's cricket on the front foot, you know, trying to gain an advantage over the opposition and trusting ourselves to do it from day one right through to the end of the game.
How did the job come about? You said you've only been in the job since what, early March?
Yeah, so Dale Benkenstein moved on to Lancashire, basically, in the middle of the winter. So it kind of happened pretty sharpish. I think the interview process started just before Christmas. And by the time we got through the process, you know, it was February, and then by the time I served notices and everything, 1st of March was the earliest I can get going.
Mm. Remind everyone what you were doing before. You said you were serving your notice. So what did you leave to come back to Gloucestershire?
So, yeah, so I generally had a bit of a hybrid role. My main job was at Marlborough College. I was heading up the cricket there. Really enjoyed doing that. Obviously over the winter, but the main role was in the summer. Also was on the back of doing the white ball T20 stuff with Glamorgan last year. But yeah, the role that I was winding up was really with Marlborough College, who were very kind to let me serve a short notice period so I can get going.
And when you saw the Gloucestershire job, you know, was available again, did you think, yeah, I've got to go for it? That is me. That's what I want.
Yeah, no, definitely. It just came at a good time, to be honest. You know, for the last two, three years especially, I've been coaching at the, you know, elite level. I've been doing some batting scouting for England. And, you know, it came to a time when my children were leaving full-time education at school, and I had an opportunity to throw myself into a role. So the timing was quite good.
Just a quick sort of diversion. You mentioned your children. One of your offspring, your son, is actually on the books at Manchester City. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. He's in his third year there now. He's 18. Really enjoying it, as you would. Yeah, he's going really well. Playing under 21s mainly, but it's been fortunate to be in a couple of first team squads in the Champions League and Club World Cup, that type of thing. So with a bit of luck, with the run-in towards the end, we're hoping he might get some minutes.
And so, cricket is your game, but so how much is your head turned by football, and how much advice were you able to give him about the professional game, you know, professional sport, playing professional sport, and what you need to be successful in professional sport?
Well, as you can imagine, I mean, pro sport, you know, the basics are, it's pretty much the same in terms of application, attitude. The only main difference is the skill set. You know, he's good at kicking the ball, something that I wouldn't advise myself to do if I was a cricketer. But yeah, all the rest is pretty much the same in terms of skill development, you know, trying to improve yourself and trying to compete with others around you. So from that perspective, it was quite seamless, really.
Yeah. What sort of dad are you in terms of watching your son play? Are you kicking every ball as well, or do you just sort of, you know, can you sort of distance yourself from it?
No, I'm quite an easy watcher. I love to watch when I can, and of course you live in and breathe in every kick, but not to the point that I'm clenching or biting my nails too much. He's pretty calm and relaxed on the pitch, which is, you know, sends a lot of good vibes to me. I'm watching on the side, so I can relax and enjoy.
I want to know why he's not playing for Bristol City. Why is he playing for Manchester City? He should be playing for Bristol City.
Well, you know, things don't quite work out like that. You know, when he was young, you know, I think Southampton were the ones that were, I'd say aggressive, but mean that in the nicest possible way. They gave him an opportunity to join their youth development. And he did that at Bath and then down to Southampton. And then he went from Southampton to Man City when he was 16. So, yeah, we didn't deliberately avoid Bristol City, but they were never really asking the questions.
I was only being half serious. What a fantastic opportunity for him. You know, to be at Manchester City, you know, at the moment, you know, one of the top clubs in the world. Anyway, we'll move on from that, because you didn't come in here to talk about football tonight. But you brought up your children, so I thought there are probably some people who don't know that you do have a son that is on the books at Manchester City, and he's worth keeping an eye on. One thing I also find fascinating is how much difference can a head coach make to a team? I mean, you played for years. You were extremely successful. In fact, you were one of the most successful county captains there have ever been. You won 7 trophies, and in 1 year you won the lot. How much can a head coach contribute to a cricket team, basically?
Yeah, no, really good question. You know, particularly these days, a lot of the players are very self-motivated, self-driven, and very much can look after their development to a point. I guess the point and the job of the head coach is to make sure you create and maintain an environment where players can express themselves and evolve. And that's my main role to start with. Is making that environment such that players can really go out and enjoy themselves and at the same time develop their game.
So is it about being a sort of player manager rather than, you know, the technical side of it? Oh, you know, your off drive doesn't look quite right, or, you know, your arm's not in the right place for bowling, whatever. Is it more about player management?
It is all-encompassing, to be honest. When you watch a player and there's a time and place to work on technique, but certainly if you observe something that's restricting, say, for batter opportunities to score, you will discuss it in one of his feedback sessions. Once you discuss it, you will then facilitate maybe a batting coach to come and work on it quite diligently with that player. So your job really is to spot and pick up all the areas where we can improve as a team and as an individual, and then make sure we've got the relevant people to progress it and detail it.
And are you a sort of with the players, you talk about giving them feedback. Are you someone, it's sort of arm around the shoulder type person, or are you like stern word, come on, we need to do this better, you know, this isn't working, or what sort of approach do you take there, or is it different things for different players?
Yeah, quite naturally. I've never tried to define my style as such. I think once you have a rapport with each individual player, like you would do with any friendship or relationship, and you deal with it according to the person you're dealing with. It's really obvious how some people prefer to be communicated with. And so it makes sense to communicate in a way that both parties are really happy and conducive. So, you've got to be flexible, which is something I know. I mean, there's no point having a hardened philosophy and a one way of doing things. I don't think that will work in a 2024 sporting environment.
Mm. So are you a good watcher? Would you consider yourself, I can watch and then wait for that moment to say something?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't dive in. My general way of dealing with things, I would watch, I would observe, I would digest, I will reflect, then I will share. And different players want feedback at different times. Some want it straight away. Some are happy to reflect themselves, and then you dive in. You will make mistakes along the way, of course. You might upset a few by getting that slightly wrong, but it's okay. I think people realise that you're trying to do things for the right reasons, and you're not going to be absolutely perfect every time. But the main thing is that we both move on and try and move the game and the team forwards.
Mm. People say never go back, but in a way, you've kind of gone back three times because you were there as a player, then you went back as a coach, and you're going back as the head coach again. What does that feel like?
Yeah, I mean, people say a lot of things, don't they? I don't see it like that at all. This is definitely a different project, and I see it as such. This is nothing to do with what I've done previously or as a player. This is Gloucestershire County Cricket Club 2024 and onwards, and there's a job to be done here. I'm quite excited because the group, despite the bad performance last year, is a really exciting group of players. So in a lot of ways, without a lot of work, I feel as though we can shift performances to something a lot more positive.
You still, even, you know, it's cool outside. It's been some rain around today. It's early April. Do you still have that same sort of heartbeat for the start of a new season, or does this one feel extra special?
Definitely extra special. Named the first squad today at 12 o'clock to the players, which was quite a moment, I think, for 2024. So although we've done a lot of work together already, that moment, naming that first group, actually was quite exciting. It's great to kind of put your arm around someone and say, you're in the squad for the first game. You know, congratulations on all the hard work you've done so far. But equally, it's the first time I've had to give some disappointing news to players that might not be directly involved. So, yeah, it's always a good moment, but bittersweet always.
Did you have some players coming to you and saying, why am I not in the squad? Or did they sort of keep their counsel?
Well, at this stage of the season, before it gets too hectic, I have got time, obviously, to think about the squad I'll be taking. So there is time to, before you name the squad, to talk to the ones that are not likely to be in it. So there were no surprises today on announcement. You know, we've had a good chat well before then.
And is your focus this season, because of what happened last year and what happened the year before for the county, you know, relegated from Division 1, then Division 2, not winning a game, is your focus the championship this season? Is it above the one-dayers, or, I mean, how do you see it?
To answer that honestly, yes, the focus is championship for the first 7 weeks. Then when the T20 Blast starts, the focus is the Blast. then we're back to the Championship. We have got enough time, enough space to compete in both formats. So I'm not necessarily prioritising either. But obviously the Championship is very much the first 7 weeks of my tenure. So that gets all my attention right now, because getting off to a good start, a high performance start, is really important to me. So for now, yeah, the Championship has got my full focus.
One thing I find fascinating about this time of year and how clubs prepare is the fact that, and you did it, you went away to South Africa to prepare. But of course, the conditions, I imagine in South Africa, were nothing like the conditions that you might face at Derby on Friday. You know, I imagine, anyway, you tell me what it was like in South Africa, you know, warm conditions, so almost probably perfect practice. And then you come back and then you're going into where, you know, it might be chilly, it might be a bit damp, it might seem. So how do you sort of try to get that balance right between, you know, having the right conditions to prepare for the season and then finding the conditions a bit different from the ones that you were preparing with?
Yeah, no, really valid point. But the truth is, a pre-season is kind of much more than just trying to replicate the conditions for the first couple of games. The pre-season is an opportunity to kind of live and breathe cricket as a group. Being away allows you to not just train, practice, but to talk through how you want to play the game, and all the peripheral stuff that comes with preparing for the county season is much easier when, you know, you're all staying together 24 hours. So you cover a lot of ground in those 10 to 12 days. Equally, pre-season is important for the bowlers, for instance, to kind of get their bowling loads up. So being on their feet, getting their boots on and running in and getting bowling ready. That is quite high risk if you stay in England and you're just doing that indoors. You don't quite get the same readiness as a bowler to get going for the first Championship game. For the batters, equally, although the conditions aren't exactly the same, batting in the middle and establishing that rhythm of facing a bowler off their full run and the space that you have in the middle of practice, it is really, really relevant to getting ready for the first game of the season. So there are lots and lots of positives and pluses for getting a pre-season trip just before you get going.
So you just accept that if, I know, at Derby on 11 o'clock on Friday morning, it's green and nipping around, that's just, you know, that's just the way it goes. You know, you have to cope with that. But your pre-season is about a much sort of wider and longer term perspective.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, if there were opportunities to do that in England, guaranteed, I think most people would take that chance and stay here. But it's just probably a little bit high risk. You have to adapt. You have to have that flex. As it transpired, where we were in Stellenbosch, I mean, they did have a heavy dew every night. So we just started early in the morning when it was a little bit damp. And as it turned out, the practice facilities were quite conducive to a early season in England.
Right. So Stellenbosch, a bit like the county ground in Derby then.
Those are your words, not mine.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I've just got a question about fast bowling, actually. Watching the IPL the other day, Mayank Yadav touched about 97 miles an hour. Very exciting. One of about 20 fast bowlers in India now. We've produced, England have produced, you know, one fast bowler, a genuine fast bowler, Mark Wood, in probably the last decade or so. You played with, you know, Sid, for instance, Sid Lawrence, who obviously was a brilliant fast bowler for Gloucestershire and England. I just wondered what we could do to find some more. Have you got a reason? Can you put your finger on why we're not producing fast bowlers like perhaps we did 20 years ago?
Well, I can't say for absolute sure, but I'm pretty confident that, you know, the first class game in England isn't always massively conducive to bowling as fast as you can. I think if you can bowl early 80s, you can be so prolific, if you know, with, because you get in some lateral help. So I think it's not meant to be, but I think that could be a deterrent for some bowlers who are thinking, you know, I want to get wickets, I want to bowl lots of overs. And that is probably the best way. Bowling absolute.
I mean, you say that, but I sort of believe that is true, but Indian pitches aren't exactly conducive to fast bowling either, and yet they have generated quite a few. I mean, I don't know whether it's perhaps the amount we play, is it, do you think, also? I mean, you look at, you're probably a bit daunted, I'd imagine, taking on the Gloucestershire job with the the prospect of seven first-class games in the first 8 weeks, and maybe that's another reason why. I mean, you know, players, and look, you and I go back a little way, don't we, where we played more than the players do now, but yet they are now complaining about the amount they play.
I know. I mean, to take your point about India, you're right, they're not conducive to fast bowling, but they're not conducive to medium pace seam either. So that's why that's why they don't do that. I think on the surface, that's not giving you a lot of help. There's probably more reason to try and bowl the speed of light, I think, because you're kind of trying to take the surface out of the equation. But in England, we always have the surface as a ambassador almost. You know, it's often quite helpful. The amount of cricket is... Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've got some guys that are bowling quite quick, and we're very, you know, you tiptoeing around how often they should or can play, which is quite tricky.
One thing we haven't talked about so far, and we should, because, you know, you were, I mentioned, I was thinking about this before I came on tonight, you know, that was a very sad death of Mike Proctor, who was one of Gloucestershire's greatest ever cricketers. In fact, you know, that I remember it well, the '70s, you know, Proctorshire. And I was thinking, you know, you won 7 trophies as captain. Why is it not Elainshire? You know, why yeah. But then I thought, actually, that one thing about that Gloucestershire side of the late '90s and early 2000s was it was a team, wasn't it? It wasn't just about you, it was about so many different facets. What are your sort of, you know, take you down memory lane a little bit while we've got you here.
Sure.
What was that like? And those you don't remember, I'm sure a lot of people on this call do, you know, seven one day trophies. I mean, a Gloucestershire trip to Lords was a bit like just taking your dog out. It was just so it was so regular, you know. The chicken came up the M4.
That's right. But just before I do talk about that, just on Mike Proctor, it was extremely sad day when we heard that news. And Certainly, it's very kind of you to kind of mention me in the same breath. But certainly, I'm not even being modest. Not even half the cricketer he was. He was outstanding, you know, on an international stage. So he was a fabulous cricketer. But yeah, just going back to I guess the Gloucestershire days and the winning days. Yeah, we were renowned as a good team, guys contributing from 1 to 11. But in their own right, they were quality cricketers, and some probably didn't really get the full credit that they deserve. But yeah, there's some guys that are very good at executing their roles and did it time and time again. Well, over 7 years. So they weren't too shabby.
Do you think back to those times, think, actually, I mean, that was incredible what we achieved.
Yeah, sometimes I do. I mean, I don't look back too much. I'm not massively nostalgic. But when it comes up in conversation, I talk about it. You might remember a particular game or so in that sequence. But it really was an outstanding run, if I may say so myself. You know, I always remember when we did the first double in 99, I went on an England tour, and but you know, Mike Atherton was still part of the group then, obviously part of a rampant Lancashire side who were doing really well just prior to that. And he said, well, you know, Super Cup, that's not the real double. You know, I took it on my chin. And luckily the next year, we did exactly the same again, plus the Sunday League. So we got the treble that year. And I was so delighted to go up to him and said, yeah, that wasn't the real double either. That's called the treble. So he never forgave me for that.
Well, what did he say? Do you remember?
I can't remember, but I knew I had bragging rights at the time, and we kind of at the same time nicked Lancashire's quest as a top one day side in the country at the time.
What was the most special mm-hmm. one of those trophies? Was it the Somerset win?
Well, luckily they all have different significance. The first one, which is very special, because we hadn't been there for 22 years, was against Yorkshire. And from a personal point of view, you know, I got 100 and I got man of the match. And it's one that I remember fondly, mainly because I felt as I, you know, I did my bit, I contributed well. Somerset was later that year. A nice fierce rivalry with Somerset. A very unhappy Jamie Cox, I remember. That was quite sweet as well. And actually was very special in its own right, because a lot of people thought the one early in the year was a bit of a one-off. So it was nice to get a second one straight away to kind of prove any doubters that that was a bit of a fluke. But I would say to maintain that energy and momentum into the following year and not win the two cup competitions, but win the one-day league as well, which requires a different kind of set of like accomplishments. I mean, 2000 was really, really rewarding.
Do you think you got the credit you deserve? People sort of say, oh, well, they're a sort of team of, I think people used to say this, they're sort of bits and pieces cricketers, and they all sort of come together as a team. And people were sort of a bit sniffy because it was Gloucestershire, and you know, people sort of used to look down their nose at Gloucestershire players, and they never used to pick them to play for England.
Yeah, it's funny what the narrative is sometimes. You hear words like that, you know, bits and pieces, and I mean, in our camp, we called ourselves multi-skilled, and that's what we encourage. Which, funny enough, is, you know, the kind of buzzword these days. You know, if you can contribute all across the game, you're going to be a very valuable player. And that's how we saw it. You know, we didn't want players to be one-dimensional. You know, we want them to bring everything they can to add and trying to impact the game. And that's how we saw it, as being multi-skilled, not bits and pieces.
And to bring it full circle, and the last contributions from me, and then we'll sort of throw it open. Mm-hmm. What will success look like for you this season, or in your time as Gloucestershire's head coach? Bear in mind what's happened in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think even considering what's happened, I want in 2025 to be competing in Div 1 in Championship. And in 2026, I want to be in a position to be competing at the top of Div 1. So there's a clear four-day challenge there. One, to get promoted this year, and two, to continue that momentum and challenge over the next 2 years for the top three or four. Winning it might just take a little bit longer, but as long as we're going in that right direction, I'll be satisfied. Whilst we're mounting that challenge, the main competition, the main white ball competition, is the Blast at the moment. As you know, not all players are available for the 50 over. That's going to be a harder nut to crack, because in the group of nine, you know, there's some tougher teams in my view in that group. So getting into the top four there is going to be a real challenge. However, I think we probably got a stronger T20 Blast side than we did last year, and you know, we could expect to make some moves in that comp. So getting to the top four in the Blast and promotion in the Championship would be a fairly stellar season for us, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that your perhaps long suffering fans would go for that, definitely. And then just finally for me, just generally, one general question, Mark, on the state of county cricket. We often muse, don't we, over the state of county cricket. What does it look like going into a new season, 2024, in early April, do you think?
The state, well, it's quite healthy from what I've seen. Like I said to you, the last 3 years, with my role as a batting scout, I've looked at it slightly differently. Watching a lot more cricket than I had done previously. Obviously, the selectors demand a certain amount of detail now, and it's important that you look at this with some depth. And I like what I saw, actually, which is one of the encouraging things that really got me back into the elite game. I think it's quite healthy. I think there are a lot of cricketers out there that are really keen on evolving their game. They want to play international cricket. And they're thinking, well, if I can't play international cricket, I want to compete in the franchises around the world. They've got an opportunity to have a real glorious ride, you know, as a professional cricketer over the next 5-6 years. And I think some are chomping at the bit.
That's really well put by Mark Alleyne, chomping at the bit. That's exactly how I remember feeling at the beginning of a county season. That smell of newly mown grass, the freshly prepared pitches and nets, all the newly painted stands and fences around the pavilion, and the polished floors in the dressing room. Everything's pristine and beautifully prepared, and there's a real sense of excitement. There's a sense of optimism as well when you start a season. You've been named in the squad for the first match, and of course you want to shine, and you want your team to perform and strive for those honours, those championship titles, those one day cups and so on. It's a really exciting time to be a cricketer. Not so much maybe to be a spectator, because you're going to have to be well wrapped up, but it's been a long winter, hasn't it? So finally the county championship is here, starting on Friday with each team in action. So we'll report back after that first round of games. And by the way, just to mention our sister podcast, Storylines, with Melissa Storey and Nikki Chowdhury. They're reviewing the New Zealand-England one-day series for the women out in New Zealand. And a mention of Melissa, who has just been awarded the Christopher Martin Jenkins Broadcaster of the Year Award. A fantastic accolade for a really burgeoning young commentary talent, Melissa. So well done to her, and listen out for their new podcast, which is coming out at the weekend. Enjoy your cricket wherever you are watching it from, the warmth of your home or the chill of the stands, and we'll be back to speak to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.